everybody. Welcome back to the Frying Pan Podcast, episode number 14. I'm joined today, as always, by a friend and writer, Rowan Kane. First of all, Rowan, happy St. Andrew's Day. You may have passed you by, but as a Scot, I thought I'd share this with you. How are you getting on over there in America?
Good. Just woke up. I'm newly arisen. And happy St. Andrew's Day. Now that I know so early in the morning, I can celebrate it all day long with my salt tires and tartans.
Yeah, absolutely. And your reticence around the day of St. Andrew is perfectly justified, because I, as a Scottish person, I actually only found out it was St. Andrew's Day by someone telling me over the phone. They'd vaguely seen it on Facebook or something, that there was St. Andrew's Day today. Otherwise, I would have completely fucking forgotten. The reason for this, I believe, is that St. Andrew's Day, well, in terms of all of the great British holidays for their respective countries, St. Andrew's Day probably would rank a lucky second or a pretty standard third in the...
What is the Welsh Day?
They have St. David's Day in Wales.
Okay.
And I believe it is sort of occasionally celebrated. There is some sort of festival eating leek. I remember someone telling me a story about eating a raw leek, as if that's something to do on a day in Wales.
How would you rank the four of them?
Well, I'd say St. George's Day is probably like rock bottom, and it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. It has the kind of, as well as the fact that England is the country that everybody hates, including people who aren't from the UK. An exposure of English culture is probably not that well received by other nations in the United Kingdom. Plus, they have a very strange culture, England. I've never quite understood in that, like, everyone, it's a very divided country. I know Scotland, they all hate each other as well, but there's, like, less people to hate, whereas in England, there's fucking millions of people there, and they all really hate each other. Also, it has that horrible right-wing kind of element now, St. George's Day. English nationalism is, like, a subject that completely fascinates me, but it's a subject for another podcast maybe. But they are definitely ranked number four, and then vying it out for the kind of qualifying spots at two and three are probably Scotland and Wales, neither of whom have a particularly memorable kind of national saint day, as is aptly proven today. And I should go back, actually, because I did say of the great British holidays here, and I may have caused great offence to yourself and your Irish roots here, because obviously the number one I would rank is St. Patrick's Day in terms of international fame and general marketability. And I do apologise profusely for lumping you and your forefathers in with that horrible mess that is the UK, and I'm genuinely sorry. But on the plus side, you've got a more of a global brand of holiday, shall we say?
Arguably one of the best holidays anywhere in like the whole year. Like you can put St. Patrick's Day up there as a one day holiday with almost any other holiday.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, when you break it down to its sort of more integral parts, it is one of the few days where kind of public inebriation and like on quite like a global scale is completely not just accepted but encouraged
and expected.
And for that, you know,
God bless. And I didn't take offense, because they are generally the same category. When you have an area and they have four saints days, I'll let it slide this time. But any other, I think that's one of the few categories you can actually lump these two together. Geographically maybe, and English speaking, but even then you've got Gaelic and so.
Yeah. I should say of the...
You're walking a fine line.
The five nations that make up and comprise the former kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, currently. Yeah.
But then we're just in the semantics, and we're being politically correct.
It gets a bit too crazy. And with this crazy world, it's a very slippery slope, and we won't go into it. But anyway, that's for all our Scottish listeners out there. Happy St. Andrew's Day.
Celebrate St. Andrew's Day,
as you wish. God knows what is going on. Probably fuck all. That's what happened in my experience. And good on you.
So actually, one more thing before we talk. I always confuse St. Andrew's Day with Robert Burns Day. Mm. So when you said St. Andrew's Day, I was going to say, oh, like have some haggis and like read a Robert Burns poem. But that's Robert Burns Day, not yep. Yeah.
Different day. Arguably, definitely more famous and more fun than St. Andrew's Day.
Depends on how much you like haggis.
I like it a lot. I like whiskey. I occasionally like to dance. Very rigidly structured country jaunty sort of dances. Occasionally. Usually after the previous two things I've mentioned, and then everything's great.
Absolutely.
And so, it's a cultural intro into the show today. And I believe today we're going to look at some of the things that we have learned. Obviously, now you're in a sort of more retrospective period of your time in Indonesia, as you are no longer in Indonesia. And I'm personally not, but I certainly do think the process of moving abroad is didactic. Is that can I use didactic in that way or not?
I have no idea if you can use didactic in that in that form. I'm going to plead ignorance on that. I have no idea.
Well, okay.
We can look it up later. Listeners, look it up and then you can get back to us about whether that was a proper use of the word didactic.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we're going with this, the didactic experience of sort of things that we've learned. Start with you. I mean, you're back in America now and you're as we said last week, you've had a fair culture shock in the form of the way people talk and people with tattoos on their thighs. And how has, I suppose, you had to ask a sort of fairly general question. How do you feel, it has affected you personally, the experience of being in Indonesia? Yeah. What have you learned?
Yeah. So this is going to sound like I'm kind of harping, and I'm not sure if that's the right word either. I'm playing into some sort of popular movement right now. So right now in the U.S., there's this huge PC culture movement about like you can't political correctness in colleges, especially. So you can't say anything offensive. You can't. They're thinking about changing the names of. So this is one example, without getting too complicated. They're thinking of changing the names of all these buildings at Ivy League universities to better reflect the culture today, and also to kind of punish retrospectively the people the buildings are named after. So there's two cases. One is absurd, and one I agree with.
Okay.
So one of the Yale colleges, and I promise I'm getting to a point on this. So one of the Yale colleges is called Calhoun College. Calhoun was a like slave owning senator who was the intellect behind slavery apologists before the Civil War.
For those of you who have seen the movie Amistad, he plays a fair role in this.
Okay,
one.
So, John C. Calhoun. So, that one, absolutely, you should rename the college. The other one is Woodrow Wilson, who was, like, a great statesman, by all accounts, a pretty good president. But he was racist, and he did some things that push blacks out of the civil service. So that's this thing. So they're trying to get his building taken out of prison. But the whole kind of backdrop of this is white privilege and how every building is named after an old white guy and is and these Ivy League schools and America as a whole is built on white, especially male privilege. So this is the point I'm getting to, is that there's a phrase in this kind of movement called check your privilege, meaning be aware of your kind of, as a white male, you need to be aware of your privilege that you were given because you're a white male in America. And I think that living in Indonesia has certainly checked my privilege in a way that I had, that it hadn't been checked before. So we talk about all the things, all the kind of, I think we talked about the kind of racial profiling, for lack of a better term, of the police in pulling white guys over on motorbikes to check if they have the right licenses and that kind of stuff, which is a fair thing to do because many of them don't, but it's still racial profiling in a very strict sense of the term. Actually, very strict sense of the term. So I think that's probably the biggest thing I've learned there, and that's not like a specific thing, but it's a much broader kind of idea that I had to realize that here or there in Indonesia, I wasn't kind of the one that was in charge at all, ever, and I wasn't the one who had the power, basically. Because in the U.S., white males have all the power.
Yeah.
So it's really easy. It's really easy for me to like look at someone who has power, relate to them, and be like, "Oh, I'm like them. Like we can be this." And this is the getting into like the privilege of the white male privilege, the psyche of the white male privilege. And it's really easy to say, "Oh yeah, check my privilege. Like I check my privilege. I realize like how lucky I am." Blah 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 blah. But to actually experience it is one more kind of step. And it puts you in the kind of, I think it just allows you to relate better to certain less fortunate, or not less fortunate, but less empowered corners of our society.
I mean, you could say, I mean, maybe you agree that, certainly America exists in a wee bit of a bubble. A little bit.
Occasionally. A lot of it.
Not to get too political, but you have a lot. I mean, I'd be very interested just on a purely practical note to see what they will change said colleges and institutions to, whether we will have the... I suppose they've got a few, like, Frederick Douglasses and stuff they could throw in there, and eventually Jay-Z... And I don't know the other one from Destiny's Child,
Beyonce.
No, I figure she's going to get Yale. So I mean, the other one, what's her name? Kelly Rowland. The Kelly Rowland Library at Harvard University. Maybe
no. Kelly Rowland will be at I like Kelly Rowland. Kelly Rowland is like a UPenn. I think University of Pennsylvania aligns with Kelly Rowland. Yeah.
And right. Excellent. Yeah. And then Kobe Bryant's retiring quite soon. So maybe he'll also get into that pantheon. And that's just dealing
so
with
this
the...
isn't. So this isn't people who buy or who pay, who like give money to universities. This is like historical kind of things, right?
As far
as I know. But yeah, you're right. So the one that they're talking about for Princeton was W.E.B. Du Bois, who was like a black nationalist, kind of. Not a black nationalist, but like a... he was one of the first civil rights leaders. Okay. Back before it was civil rights. This was like late 19th century. And it's not a bad guy to have a building named after. But like the president... Woodrow Wilson was president of Princeton University and president of the United States. And he like founded the League of Nations and had his 14-point plan and like had all his good shit. Yeah. He was bad as well in some ways, but there was a whole fucking discussion on it last night that I listened to, but yeah.
No, I mean, there's lines have to be drawn somewhere. Otherwise it all gets a bit too complicated. Yeah. When do we start shipping stuff, you know, back to places? Then it's, it gets in the whole Elgin Marbles debate, and I understand where that's all coming from.
Yeah,
and it's a thing that affects everyone. But it's interesting that's a good thing that you've from your Indonesian experience. You're in a pretty unique position for like an American, I suppose, to have experienced that kind of thing.
Yeah, Yeah, and I wouldn't say I was, like, persecuted or anything like that. And I wouldn't say, like, I was put in any position that was frightening or in a physical sense or anything like that, which is what, like, black males in the U.S. are put under every day. Like, they're... Like that was the subject of a book that just came out about how, like, the violence, like, the continual violence against the black male body, physical violence. And I was never in that situation, so I couldn't say it went that far. But it certainly was kind of an awakening about how, just because I'm a white guy, I'm not, like, put in some pedestal there. Like, I am. It's in a lot of ways here by society.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about you, Lou? What have you learned over these past 10 months, 11 months?
Well, I mean, apart from the kind of physical things, the linguistic element to the whole thing, and also when not to go out in the sun, which are two kind of more practical ways I've looked at it. The way you brought it up was quite interesting, is that very much play the outsider role here. Very much play the outsider role. I've kind of looked at it the other way. So I picked out two aspects of Spanish life which are quite interesting. The one thing that I think when I go back to Britain it might be quite a shock to the system, is the, like, endemic racism that exists here. And doesn't really exist anywhere else that I have lived in for any sort of extended period of time. And again, I'll focus in on one example here, which happened to me this week, but it's by no means unique. As I was buying fruit in the supermarket, the fruit girl, who's lovely, lovely girl, and she's very, very nice, and I don't know what her name is, probably Maria, but, like, she's very, very nice, and we were chatting away, and she was talking to me about her religious holidays coming up, and I was talking about Christmas, and then obviously they have the Three Wise Men Day as their big day. And she said, do you want to see a picture of me dressed as the Three Wise Men? And I thought,
nice.
Okay, like, I can, yeah, sure, that sounds fun. It's like, and she explained before, I go out and I give candy to children at sweets for the British audience, and I like to dress up like this every time. And then she showed me the picture, which was, like, her and her three mates, like, blacked up and with, like, the comedy red lips and afro wigs. And it was like, right, like, that is, like, on no level is that okay? Is that okay? And at the time I thought, I'm not as affected by that as I definitely would have been in the past. And then it dawned on me that the constant thing of, are you going to see, like, the Moors and the pretend battle against the Moors that we still stage 600 years after we got rid of them? No, I'm not. Are you going to black up for the festival? No, I'm not. But it's ground me down. And now I do, for example, last 2 weeks ago, I used the word packy in reference to someone's mother without even thinking that it would also be a terrible racial slur, which it is.
Packy, as in the cleaning lady.
The cleaning lady, Packy. But it,
yeah.
Yeah, it became a name first, and then I realized the phonetic significance of it after.
Okay. I think that's forgivable.
Fine. But yeah, it's, I hadn't even thought that it would be an offensive term at all for, like, an English, an anglophonic audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was certainly one.
So I have a question about that. Or a comment to kind of add on to it. So I think we've talked about this before on one of the podcasts, maybe not this one, but almost certainly the Volterra, about Zwarte Piet in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And he's Santa's little helper. And there's the big one, and then this ties in perfectly. The privilege of the white Santa with all his little Zwarte Piet running around, all his black Piets in blackface with the big lips. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's shocking. When the first time you see it, like, it's in person. Like, you see a white girl walking down the street completely blacked up. in blackface, it's like, it's a little jarring, but I guess they're used to it. So. Yeah. Just, and now you are.
Yeah. Now it just kind of, it grinds you down. And I better be a bit careful. Though I'm going back to Scotland, to be fair, so there's no danger of me bumping into any ethnic minorities there at Christmas time. So that's safe.
Scottish guys, well, at least the ones I worked with, sneaky racist. Mm. Sneaky racist. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, you said you had a second. Yeah, you had a second point.
The second, a bit less profound, just I've learned that things should be a lot cheaper.
Mm.
Yeah, like things are just incredible. I incredibly cheap. It's something I've come to really learn and appreciate here. I got absolutely loaded at the weekend with booze and pizza, and spent sort of like €10, which is like nothing. And was like really fucking drunk, like so drunk that I walked out of a restaurant without paying because I forgot. It's these kind of small privileges that, I've really, really taken on board as a sort of as an experience.
I would second that. I would second that that things just need to be cheaper. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason for food to be as expensive as it is, mm-hmm. and. Well, I guess like manufacturing and labor costs in countries like in the West, but even still, like that's not really an excuse.
No.
And also, here's the other thing: here's another thing I learned that I just popped into my mind. We take like the cleanliness and care of food so seriously, and it doesn't need to be like that crazily taken care of. Like everything doesn't need to be refrigerated from like all the time. Like it's, you can be a little bit more lax with stuff.
You can get away with a lot. Yeah. I think we touched on it in other times, but like a happy medium between what we experience now and what we have in our home countries, I think would be fine.
Yeah. Especially in our homes with our mothers. Cause I feel like your mom and my mom are similar in terms of food care.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Anything else? Did you learn anything else? I'm racking my brain right now to figure out if I.
No. I mean, it's obviously. There's many other things that I suppose I have learned along the way, and I'm sure they will crop up in other episodes of the podcast. But in terms of time, and in terms of two fairly linkable experiences. We'll keep moving.
Yeah. So what was your expat experience? Did you have one this week?
Well, it was sort of, I've mentioned it, that I was going to do the blacktop one as the expat experience as the main thing of being like, wow, this is really, really out of the ordinary. In terms of expat experience of the week, I actually had quite a wholesome experience where we went for a countryside hike in Andalusia, which was very, 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 very pleasant. And the weather is lovely now. And we hiked for a few miles outside of the town, came upon this abandoned hacienda in the country. It's sort of like the lyrics to a Doors song. It was beautiful. There was like those wild horses kind of floating about, not floating, but... wandering around, and hares, as in like the large rabbit type thing, all over the place. Olive groves. We found some wild orange trees and ate a lot of like oranges off a tree. And it was a moment where I thought, like, this is very, very far away from the kind of Scottish experience. And it was a nice day.
That's lovely. Who'd you go with?
My other British friend who is living in the town.
Nice.
So I got to speak low quality English as well, which was good.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. That sounds like something out of a Hemingway novel or a short story. Yeah.
No, it was very good. And because Spanish people don't really hike in the country, it's not really a thing. It was empty and just, you can just wander for ages. Wow. Weather's beautiful. And it was great. It was great.
We came up over the hill and we saw the olive grove and we ate the orange trees and it was delicious and we sat there and the sun was warm That's my, that's my,
yeah, your Hemingway impression. And yeah, I suppose he did a fair amount of that, as well as other stuff. But you get the picture of rural Spain very well around here, and it is beautiful. Absolutely. It is beautiful country. Yeah. Beautiful country.
So I actually have, despite the fact that I'm not expat in situ, I have an expat experience that I think expats will appreciate and will relate to pretty well. It's the idea of how you go about telling someone you've been out of the country for an extended period of time. So most people don't live out of the country. Let's put it that way. Like the vast majority of Western populations don't live outside their country for they don't go outside their country, let alone live outside the country. So when you're talking with, let's say, for lack of a better term, normal people, how do you go about saying, yeah, I've lived outside, without sounding braggadocious or without kind of, sounding like a dick? I'll pose the question to you. How would you go about that?
I generally don't see that many people that I would have to explain myself for that longer period of time anymore. I'm too old, and I don't give a fuck about people like the kind of, oh, what have you been up to type. It's like, where do you want me to fucking start? I haven't seen you for 5 years or something like that. I mean, I could really like relay an incredible amount of information for you here if you really want. But fundamentally, I live in Spain. And I just kind of leave it at that. But that's why people think I'm a cock. So I'm interested in your point of view here.
So I've been introduced. For some reason the way I live around here is I'm constantly introduced to new groups of people, and I don't have like a set kind of don't a set thing. But I was out the other night with some friends, and there was a big group, 90% of whom I didn't know. And so I met a couple people, and they said, so what do you do? And I'm like, okay, I'm a freelance writer. I'm working on some stuff here. And there was, I was like, I live down in Connecticut. And then they would say, oh, cool. But what else do you do? And I was in politics for a while. Then I went away. Then I kind of stopped, but it's very hard for me to not kind of hint that I was abroad. Mm-hmm. In some way, which makes me feel really self-conscious about it. So I was like, in these conversations, I have no, like I say, I was abroad for a while. And then obviously the question comes, oh, where were you abroad? I was like, Indonesia. Oh, what was Indonesia? And it's the same conversation over and over again. But it's like, I don't know how to escape that without being dishonest to people or like not. Or like, or while still creating interesting conversation.
Yeah.
So, what do you do? I'm a freelance writer. Okay. Like, where do you do that? I'm in Connecticut right now, but I just moved back home. Okay, where were you before? Oh, I was abroad. Oh, where were you abroad? I was in Indonesia. Oh, da, da. So like that, it's interesting. I think that people might find it interesting. Uh-huh. So I bring it up, but I also kind of feel like I'm, like, oh, I was in Indonesia for 10 months. I don't know. I would actually like your opinion on this because I don't know.
As a similar situation and miserable bastard as well. Like,
that's more what I was talking about. Bastard.
I'm with you. I have to say, Rowan. I think. Usually these kind of situations, for one, I'm usually like quite half caught because I hate these situations a lot of the time, having to explain what I do. Why do you live in Spain? Because I can do whatever I like here, and it's great. What do you do? I work in finance in London. Okay, that's the conversation over for me because I know what you do. Really, that's fundamentally no problem. Like I can envisage every facet of your daily life, and I might be wrong sometimes. Sometimes maybe they do something fucking crazy. But for example, I usually have these. I have no definitive opinion on this because usually I just don't get myself into the situation of having to meet new people, which is to my detriment because it means I'm a fucking miserable cunt a lot of the time. But fundamentally, the what do you do sort of thing is blah, 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 blah. And a lot of the social circles that I used to know and have hung out in, they kind of do quite similar things. And when I recount my stories of, oh, I shat myself in a train in Spain, it's like, oh, that's a lot more interesting than I settled a deal with the Chinese about selling them something that doesn't exist in a physical form. A monetary concept. Woohoo. It doesn't really get much of a point across. But then again, it also doesn't lead to a lot of sustainable friendships, and especially not a lot of sustainable female relationships, which is the one of the things here. So fundamentally, the way I would look at it, Rowan, from an outsider's point of view, is I would continue with your explaining your story. And if you really want to get laid as well, you could maybe embellish it a little bit and say how spiritual and cool it was, and how stuff there is different to stuff here, and talk about...
That's one of my big lines. That's one of my big lines. Like, how are things there? Just fucking different, man. Like, it's interesting. It's really different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's secondary to, it's fucking hot all the goddamn time.
Yeah. Really fucking hot. You think it's hot here? Nah, man. Yeah. Like, really fucking hot.
Yeah,
those really both work. Hot. But it's something you have to deal with a lot.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess it's the circles
that we travel in.
And it's a good thing, though. It's like, it shows you're thinking outside the box, the fact that you're willing to kind of go beyond Connecticut, which is probably quite a closed bubble, and Scotland, which is an extremely closed bubble occasionally.
Yeah. Well, same to you, good sir. Same to you.
Keep at it. I'm planning on, I was going to go back to Scotland, kind of play the Hemingway card a few times, see if that gets any kind of responses in bars from, anyone.
I don't think it will. I don't think it will.
Probably not. Like, probably it's not. Like, why are you so fucking tanned? It's December. Yeah. Great. Another pint of Tennent's, sir. Another pint of Tennent's. And we'll work on it from that. Anyway. Well, on that cheery note, I hope I've been of some kind of helpful advice there.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
And, take it with a pinch of salt, in true Scottish style, on this St. Andrew's Day. That's a terrible joke. Anyway.
Maybe some brown sauce as well.
Yeah. Well, sauce. Don't get the two mixed up.
Sauce.
You've got to be a bit careful there. Anyway, Rowan, thanks very much for joining me. I think we've shed some light onto possibly didactic, possibly not didactic issues of
our expat experiences.
Yeah, effectively. Yeah. Effectively. And thank you, the listeners, for joining in. Tune in again next week, where we will be discussing another facet of who we are and what we do here on the Frying Pan Podcast. You can,
yet to be determined.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can get in touch with me via my magazine, which is talkingsoup.com. Some new content up there as well, so have a look at that, or by Twitter, which is at Talking Soup Magazine. At Talking Soup Mag. Thank you. Always knows it better than me. And Rowan, how do they get in touch with you?
At RLMKANE, Twitter. Yeah. I've abandoned the other ones for the time being. So, at RLMKANE. And if you would like, if you'd like to check out the blog, at semawongstories.wordpress.com. SEMAWANG stories.wordpress.com. Good talking this week, Lou.
Total pleasure. Exercise some demons there. Magic. Rowan, I'll see you next week. Everybody else, take care.
See you next week, everybody.
Gambling in Havana, I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money.